Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 58 for September 19th, 2007. Repeal the nerd tax. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. Time for MacBreak Weekly. And MacBreak Weekly today features, I'm so pleased to say, Chris Breen from the Mac 911 column in Macworld Magazine. And of course, he's a regular on the Apple Phone Show. And I'm sure every other Mac podcast should be a regular on this one. I don't know why we've unaccountably not had you on more often. But welcome, Chris.
Well, it's great to be back. Thanks, Leo.
Old buddy, old friend, old pal.
Yeah.
Are you going on Mac, the Mac Cruise in November?
No, I'm not. I was on the list to go, and then something came up, and they said, you were the last one to be invited, and so you're the first one
nuts.
To be uninvited. That's too bad.
I'm not going either, so there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, that's what I said.
Uh-oh, something's happening. You're sounding like Donald Duck. Did you all of a sudden start downloading email?
No. That's a neat effect.
Leo, I have reason to believe that Chris Breen might be a Cylon.
I think that's a red light going up and down his back right now.
Ooh.
Talk some more, Chris.
I'm talking some more. And,
you sound just like a Cylon. This is what we should have made the Macalope sound like. Chris, I'm going to hang up on you and call you right back, okay?
Okay.
Merlin. Let's start over.
Merlin, man, I just edited it and make it all smooth as silk. You'd never know it happened if I remember. Merlin Mann is also here from 43 Folders and the Merlin Mann Show at themerlinmannshow.com and 43folders.com. Hey, Merlin.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
Suffering from a massive head cold.
I think something like crawled into my nose and like laid eggs.
Like alien. No.
Something very unpleasant has happened and I'm under the weather. But no, I'm totally loopy and high on the cold medicine.
That's
so
good. That makes it for a wonderful MacBreak.
Yeah.
Whenever you can be loopy and high, we hope you will join us.
I'm loopy and high.
Chris Breen's proud of it. Alex Lindsay is also here at an undisclosed location somewhere, a Hilton somewhere in the world.
It's actually a Marriott. They changed, you know, these guys, they buy and sell each other's hotels. So it's a Marriott in Burbank. I'm actually waiting for a meeting. So I'm in the quietest place I can find.
That sounds good.
In the Marriott lobby.
None of you are at, I'm surprised to hear, TechCrunch 40, which is going on in San Francisco right now. You don't care about Web 2.0?
What is that about? Is that for 40-year-old people?
Yeah. You're not too young, are you? You're right
no,
there.
No, I would just get in. You must be this tall to monetize.
Yeah, you just got... I like it. Mike Arrington's conference going on right now in San Francisco, and I'm just watching. I just watch Twitter, Pounce, and Jaiku, and you basically get the whole conference that way. It's the easiest way to do it. Chris Breen's a lucky dog. He has all the new iPods.
I do. I don't have the Shuffle. Because
it's not new.
Because I didn't need one in celery or taupe.
Do they have funny names for them?
No, they don't. Actually, I was expecting that. I thought that was going to be sort of the restoration hardware shuffle.
Yeah,
so that
Irish
everything
Heather.
Is sort of in these non-color colors.
Right.
But they are actually those non-color colors, but they don't apply those name to them. So they say green, but rather they mean celery.
Celery. Yeah, my wife would say, I'm sure your wife too. That's what women do. They say, oh no, that's celery.
Right.
It's
right.
Green. What are you talking about?
That's not pink. That's shrimp.
Yeah, exactly. Shrimp.
I once told my wife asked me what her shirt looked like and whether it worked or not. And I told her it was too desaturated for the pants.
Only you, Alex.
It literally took her about 6 months before she was sure. This is when we were dating. Whether she was sure I was straight.
That's too desaturated for the pants. And I love your specular highlights on your earrings, though.
Honey, that waistline needs some unsharp math.
We can goo that. So, by the way, I talked to a plastic surgeon. I had a long talk at a dinner party with a plastic surgeon the other night, and he told me that he used to use Kai Power Tools goo to demonstrate what the post-surgery is going to look like. Oh. Now he uses basically the same plugin in Photoshop. I said, don't they sell specialized software? He said, yeah, but goo is much better.
Doesn't sound very scientific.
He's you know what? He's one of the top plastic surgeons in the area.
Are you getting plastic surgery, Leo?
Yeah. I said, show me what it would look like without the love handles. He goes, well, like this and like this. Actually, you've done that for me. But anyway, so tell us about the iPod Touch. Compare it to the iPhone, Chris Breen. I hear it's a little smaller and thinner.
It's a little smaller and thinner. It has no external buttons other than for turning it on and off, which is a problem because a lot of people use iPods, put them in their pockets, especially if you're riding on an unsavory subway somewhere.
Oh, you're going to have to whip it out, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we know you've got an iPod because we see the white earbuds, but it may be a shuffle and you may not be worth killing over this. In this case, however, you have to take it out. There is no way to turn the volume up and down without taking it out of your pocket. And so either you leave it on and blast your ears out or you don't hear loud enough, or you sort of hide it, you know, surreptitiously inside your book or something so that you turn to page 72 and then you can turn up the volume or change tracks.
That's too bad because I really like the rocker on the iPhone. I think that's very handy.
It is very handy. And you look at the design, you think, well, why didn't you do it? And we all know that the reason that the iPhone's headphone port is recessed is because Apple liked it that way. They liked the look of it. And it has nothing to do with anything other than that. So I think this is another decision where they said, oh, you know, that volume switch looks a little ugly there. So let's take it on. Sure, it'll be less useful, but the lines are beautiful.
Right. That's the blessing and the curse of Steve Jobs, really. I think. I mean, don't you think Steve decides all of this stuff?
I imagine he has a huge, obviously huge amount of input into it. I could really use a few more little buttons.
He doesn't like buttons. Every time I try to use that Mighty Mouse, I was using it today, it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Hate that thing.
It's weird.
I still haven't gotten over the Mighty Mouse. I'm afraid it's the first thing I tend to do when I get a computer.
Yep.
Three button mouse.
It's painful to use. You keep double clicking by accident, which by default opens Exposé the dashboard or something, and then you have to lift the finger. I mean, it's a bad. So again, once again, the anti button contingency wins again.
Was there some rumor going around that there'd be some adjustment where when you double click on the home button there's a home button on the touch as well as the iPhone, right? And wasn't there some talk where if you double click on that, it would take you to like a place of your choosing?
We lost Chris again. Doesn't it do? I think it does volume controls. But let's get Chris back because he's the arbiter of all things. So Chris, I'm sorry, we lost you again.
Yeah, my connection today is hinky.
Are you on wireless?
No, I'm wired. It's just I'm out in the boonies and for something's going on.
So we were talking about buttons,
edge Ethernet cables.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice to have? We were talking about buttons. When you double tap the home button, doesn't it do something special on the touch?
What happens with the iPod Touch, which is a very nice feature, is that you double tap it and up pops a little screen that will allow you to adjust volume and use next and previous buttons. And also you can go directly to the now playing screen. And that's a minor glitch with the iPhone that when you back yourself into other parts of the interface and you need to get back to the iPod area, you have to tap like three or four times to get back there. This allows you to do it just with a home button.
It feels to me, and it's one of the things that does bug me with the iPhone, it feels to me like pressing the back button in the browser. You kind of have to dig yourself up out of that hole so you can go back down another hole. And to me, that's a UI mistake.
I noticed when I get a call, and if I'm listening to music and I get a call, and I love the way the music pauses.
It ramps down.
Cool.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it's really nice. It's very classy. But then you have your call, and then all of a sudden the Kraftwerk starts blaring again, and it takes like five clicks, you know, to get there to be able to pause it if you don't want to listen to it anymore.
That's why, I mean, I have to say, you've got to start using the earbuds and the little clicker thing in there, because a pause is just a single click. Double click goes to next song, and then the rocker's handy. I think those little devices really make a big difference, because the rocker, you can turn it down right away.
Yeah.
So the touch, thumbs up, but PC Magazine seemed to love it.
I'm actually going to put my thumb in the middle on this one.
Okay.
Because the display is not good.
Well, there's already complaints about the contrast in that. In fact, some people are returning them. What is exactly not good about it?
Yeah, here are the good ones and the bad ones. The good ones are darker than the iPhone, and it has a yellower cast. The bad ones are really dark. So, for example, I was watching Chinatown on both the iPhone and the iPod Touch. On the bad one, it is so dark, it almost has an X-ray effect, so that when you see anything bright, the contrast is completely blown out. And there's no contrast adjustment on this thing, just brightness. So if you get a bad one, yes, you should take it back to Apple. However, even the good ones, you lose all detail in any dark area. So if you're looking at film noir, if you look at something like Chinatown, you're really going to be lost a lot of the time, even when you have brightness cranked all the way up, which is too bad. So obviously it's a different display they're using on this one, has a different pixel density. I spoke with Apple about it yesterday, and their answer was, huh, well, we've never seen that before.
Oh, well, they're going to hear about it.
Yeah, well, they obviously, I mean, it's around the web now, and we said, great, we'll send you ours. And so they're going to see one.
Yeah, DSL Extreme, or I'm sorry, DSL Reports has a long forum post on the issues. So there's at least, we've always thought there are two different iPhone screens there. So there are at least two different iTouch screens as well.
Yeah. And we're not sure what differentiates them, or we're not sure how Apple is treating the issue right now. And there are other little things, like you can enter contact events on your iPod Touch. Great. But can you enter calendar events? No.
Isn't that bizarre?
It is bizarre. And I it was another question to Apple. I said, this seems a little arbitrary to me that I can put contacts in, making it kind of like a personal information manager. And yet, why can't I do calendars? And their answer was, well, you know, you should really look at contacts as being a bonus.
It's not that we turned off calendars, but you lucked out. We forgot to turn off contacts.
You're lucky we didn't break both your arms.
Yeah. That's a bonus. Only one kneecap missed the man.
That is lame. I mean, is that something that sounds to me like some kind of cheesy last minute, you know, guy sitting around a table kind of decision? I mean, is there a functional reason to not allow you to do contact stuff? Do they want it to not feel like a PDA, like you've got it by the phone to get the PDA like feeling?
It's not a functional reason. There's an economic reason. I think that I hate it I've said this before, when I see companies arbitrarily cripple something just because they want to make more money on another product.
That's cheesy.
That's just cheesy. I mean, Intel did that with a Celeron, and we called them on that, and it's just really bad. I hacked my iPhone. You know, Alex, you were touting this Rogue Amoeba, or no, I'm sorry, the Ambrosia software ringtone.
Yeah.
And Apple's response was to put out 7.4.2, which broke it, right?
Well, it broke all the other hacks. Currently with iTunes 1.1, and I think an upcoming update, all of those still work.
Oh, good.
So, iToner has really, it's not just like a little hack, like just change the name. They're really, you know, Andrew's really digging into the what they need to do to make it really work.
Rogue Amoeba has a free one as well, and I guess that one no longer works.
Yeah, but I think the only one that works currently is iToner.
I have one that works, but I'm going to talk about that as my software pick.
Okay.
Because it requires jailbreaking the phone.
Right. This one, the great thing about this one is you don't have to do anything to your iPhone.
Right.
You don't have to do anything there to make it work. It all works. It all makes sense. It all, you know, so that's the thing that, and I'm afraid I've been too afraid of really, you know, playing with my phone.
Oh, yeah.
But I have not done a thing. I'm usually.
Now, Leo, you've gone crazy, right?
I've gone crazy, but you know why I went crazy? Because somebody sent me a second phone. I have the same exact reluctance to mess with my main phone because I didn't want to end up with a brick when Apple does an update or whatever. But now I feel much more confident because I have a pawnbroker sent me apparently there's quite a few iPhones being pawned in the Balmer area. He says we have a lot of universities here. A lot of kids go back to school. They decide they need the money, whatever. Yep. Something happens. And we were getting a lot of phones. And I said, well, good. I'll buy it from you. He said, no, you know, let me just send it to you because I'd like to hear what happens. So I hacked this one up the gills because I could.
Right. And is it still working pretty well?
Yeah.
What all broke?
Well, I'll tell you actually the whole saga. So it was a 1.0.2, the latest firmware version. There has been, as we record this, and I have to say, I should begin every podcast, every Mac Break Weekly this way. It's Tuesday, 11:30 in the morning, as we record this, September 18th. So far, at this time, no invites from Apple to appear anywhere. No firmware updates. Everything, of course, will happen as soon as we get off this recording. But as of now, it's 1.02. Shubi, my assistant, did this first. And he's actually got a very good step-by-step that he took from the ionlock.no site. You could use that as well, although I followed Shubi's. First thing you have to do is jailbreak it. Now, that just merely means you're making it so that you could put stuff on the phone. And the jailbreak is very simple. There are a number of them. There's iActivate, iFantastic. I used, and this is going to be my pick, so I should, well, I'll just give you my pick now. I used AppTap, which is from Null River, and it is really, really excellent. It actually is the first thing you should do, even if you don't plan to unlock your phone, because it what it does is allows you to put applications. It's the standalone application tool. It's very straightforward. You just hook up your phone. The key on this is to get out of iTunes. I actually turned off the iTunes helper so iTunes would stop launching. iTunes has this bad habit of launching again and again and again. So yeah. But if you turn off iTunes helper, you don't see iTunes.
This is a desktop application that you run, and it just runs right over the USB and gets to the phone?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it is so easy that I'm thinking, it's iPhone.nullriver.com/beta. I'm thinking there really isn't a lot of negatives to this. You run AppTap, it puts it on your phone, and then you have it will install other applications. So it adds an icon to that fourth row. You click that icon, and you can install other applications, and there's a lot of good applications. In fact, the first thing you do is install the community sources, which is a whole lot more applications. What it really is kind of like an apt-get, probably is apt-get for the OS X that's on the phone. And apt-get, if you've used BSD, you know, or some Linuxes, you know, is a very handy installer for Unix. It's a command line-based installer. It just downloads what you need, compiles it, and makes it work. So you suddenly have access to a dozen or so, maybe more packages, including a full BSD subsystem. So you install that. SSH, so you install that. And I'll explain one of the things Erica Sadoun, who writes for TUAW, the unofficial Apple weblog, and has been a great hacker in the iPhone community, has written a whole bunch of stuff. I'm glad Scott Bourne's not here, by the way, because I think he'd be steaming out the ears at this point. He would not be happy. Scott's not with us this week, but we'll fill him in. he could throw stuff later.
We'll make sure he's standing somewhere where the steam can come out of his ears freely.
Oh, you did what? But
again,
I didn't do it to my main phone. My main phone is pristine. And I'm very fortunate to have this kind of backup phone that I could do this to.
But you're saying nothing broke so far with what you've done.
Well, and I'll tell you a couple things. I think this is going to be
like a trip to Las Vegas, right? Where like you sit around, and you play blackjack by yourself on the computer all day long, and you make $5,000 a day. And then the one time you go to Vegas,
right,
you're going to lose your shirt.
And it could very easily happen. And I want to absolutely disclaim this, that it is, you know, risky. Now, Apple has, Jaws stepped forward last week, and Apple kind of stepped back a little bit from this. But Jaws said, hey, we don't mind if you put, applications in your phone. He didn't say we don't mind if you unlock it. I'm sure they do mind that. Although, and I have to say, as soon as I did this, every time now I sync up with iTunes, Apple says, we'd like to send back information, anonymous information about your phone to Apple. Would you give us permission to do this?
I bet that happens whenever it throws some kind of an exception. Or
have you seen that before?
I have gotten that before. And it says, we're not going to send your personal information, right. Blah, blah. Yeah.
I still say no. I don't want them to know what I've done. I'm embarrassed. I'm not ready to go to the confessional.
Well, I think it's also them trying to, obviously, if they wanted to block it, that gives them the information that they need to figure out what's getting moved around.
So AppTap's very straightforward. It's very easy. It is just like installing an application on any phone, not iPhone, obviously, but any other phone. It runs over the USB. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes. It has to download some firmware. You tell it what firmware version. It has to download some software. Puts it on the phone. Gives you access to all of these things. The next step is to put SSH on there. And now this is where it gets a little Unix-y, a little wonky. You use SSH to log into your phone from your Mac, which is really cool.
Wow. And AppTap will let you do this?
Yeah. Well, no, what you've done is AppTap lets you install the BSD. AppTap, you could just install tic-tac-toe and leave it at that. You don't have to do anything
else. Once you run AppTap and you've got that thing running, then
it's jailbroken. Now it's jailbroken, yeah.
Wow.
And so it's the easiest way.
Can you see it on your desktop after you've done the jailbreak? Can you see the...
Yeah, the phone behaves exactly the same as before. Oh, you mean, do you now see it as a disk? No.
No. Okay.
The phone behaves exactly as it did before, which is kind of odd. Mm-hmm. So you run these SSH commands, and there's a few steps. You're going to copy some files over there. I used SCP, which is the standard kind of Unix command line copy. You could use FTP to do it as well, but you copy some files. You need about, you need five different files. iUnlock, an ICE file, NOR, Minicom, and BB Updater. These are the files you'll need. You issue some Unix commands that basically consist of putting some key files on there, changing the auto run, the startup, and the most important one is you use Minicom, which is, believe it or not, a little terminal program to change the modem on the phone to allow it to use other carriers. Now, after you've done that, and it literally it's about 10 Unix command lines, you're done. I put the T-Mobile SIM in, and it works.
If it would help your Ballmer pawn shop friend, I'd be happy to look at a free phone.
It's pretty cool.
I want to, you know, just if that would be helpful, he could send me a free
David, player. If you want to send Merlin one, and he'll talk about you too.
He's got a side here. I just looked
at myself. You know, we'd all be happy to.
I looked at the Mac update page for this, and I went, you know what?
You don't want to do this to your own phone. I understand.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. I don't know. Maybe
even
I'm
having super... having done this, I'm still be reluctant. Now, a couple of things happened. One is, all of a sudden, the phone was filled with something. You know how it shows different colors of what you've got? There's an orange color for I don't know what the hell's on there. And almost all of the 8 gigabytes was full of something. So I said, well, I'm going to do a restore. This is a good chance to see what survives the restore. I did a full restore, you know, where you know, mm-hmm. you press the restore button and it wipes everything out. The phone was still unlocked.
Interesting,
yeah. AppTap is still there. So this stuff survives that stuff.
For now,
and I'm sure that with this rumored 1.11 update, and that's, by the way, apparently they're going to jump from 1.02 to 1.11. But the rumor is that Apple will have this update and will break all this stuff. So, obviously, I'm not going to update this phone until I find out what the consequences. Somebody's going to have to do it and tell us what happens.
Well, I think it's interesting. I've noticed myself, you know, because I had never used ringtones, and now I'm excited about ringtones, and I find myself just looking at iTunes, every single one that comes out now, deciding whether there's any features I really need.
Yeah, well, you're definitely going to want... I put 742 on here. It doesn't affect the phone at all.
Right.
It doesn't affect the ringtones I put on there because I'm doing it in a different way. I'm using Erica Sadoun's program. She has a really great program called Send Songs allows you to email songs, but it also allows you to take any song from your library and just copy it to the ringtones folder. So now I have any song that's in my library that I could play as a ringtone. And by the way, I don't know if you read David Pogue's, I thought, right on article. In fact, I think he was maybe a little gentle about it, on this craziness of ringtones. Very good article in which he points out kind of the salient feature that I've kind of missed, which is, why is it you have to pay an extra buck for a song you already paid for just because you're activating, instead of activating it with a play button, you're activating it with somebody calling you. Don't you have the song on your phone? Haven't you paid the right to play it back? Why should you pay an extra buck to play it back with a different button?
I agree. Gruber had a good piece about this.
It totally
feels like a racket, and the only way it doesn't seem like a racket is if you compare it to the hugely larger racket of ringtones that already exists.
It's cheaper than anybody else's.
Yeah, well, I mean, for example, when I've gotten these free Sprint phones in the past, and they give me like the keys to whatever, or get unlimited whatever, you know, these ringtones, well, first of all, on these games and all this crap, you buy them, but then they expire.
They expire. Verizon's, I think, last a year. Sprint lasts only 6 months, 3 months, something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous. And they're $250. So the whole thing is a racket. There's no question it's a racket. And Apple's maybe a little less than a racket. Gruber and Daniel Silger of Roughly Drafted. And I don't know if Daniel knows something or what. Daniel wrote a really good piece, which John referred to, saying that Apple had to do this. That Apple wanted to give them away. And the RIAA came back to them and said, no, you can't give them away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let me.
Didn't the record industries actually push to say that ringtones weren't something that they had to pay royalties on? I believe. I think it's in actually one of.
Yeah. Well, here's yes, exactly. What happens is that all the money goes to the RIAA or the labels, I should say. None of it goes to the artists.
So they've already said it's a derivative work. Yeah. So it's not held under that. So why should we have to? That's the big question.
Isn't this appalling? Yeah. It's just such a scam. Anyway, so this to me means that I could do anything I want to unlock it. And Erica's solution isn't as good as iTunes because you can't pick what part. If you wanted to do that, you'd have to edit it, upload it as a song, and then move that song over using Erica's utility. But that's fine. I've made all my ringtones. You know, I have all the Twit themes as my ringtones and stuff, and it works fine. And it survives a restore, I should point out. The only issue I had was the first time I restored it. I kind of freaked out because even though I had a T-Mobile SIM in there, the phone said, okay, now we're going to activate with AT&T. I don't think that's going to work.
Hear the it's on the door.
You don't know if that's a good idea. It turns out you have to put a certificate on there that says it's already been activated. Just pay no attention. I did that with iActivate. No problem after that. So as of now, does not impact this stuff. You may have to reinstall apps because you're wiping off the apps that you've installed. But the main hack, the unlock hack, isn't an app. It changes the modem in the phone.
Which is really interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Right. Apple could completely change that, of course, at any time.
And it's already building up a business. I have some friends, obviously, in Africa that have already seen these iPhones starting to float around, you know, in many of those countries, which won't see an iPhone anytime soon, you know, probably for another year. And it's becoming quite the gray market. I mean, they're you know, I get emails going, you know, can you send 100? And these aren't from my, you know.
I know people who have a business on eBay. They buy the phones. They charge, you know, $100 premium. They buy them, unlock them, and send them to you.
Yep. So it's starting to really build up. And it's one of those things that with a lot of these things that you're starting to see build up, like even with this kind of Apple cutting everything off from Linux users, you know, so that the iPod won't work with anything other than, you know, iTunes. You know, it doesn't take very long to kind of fix it. It's kind of like the market wants to go a certain direction. And if you go too much against where the market wants to go, it's going to go there anyway.
Sometimes it feels a little bit like Casablanca, you know, where the who is it? The Claude Rains character is shocked, you know, to find gambling going on in here. You know, where it seems like there's a certain amount of this stuff that, you know, to their vendors and their support people, they've got to put up a certain amount of, you know, fuss. But then it's weird. It's weird where they choose to clearly like let stuff slide. It's fascinating to me.
You know, I don't think Apple will let this slide. I think that the next update will clearly change this. Although, you know, the phone's working. I've got all these apps on here now. I don't really, why do I need to update it?
Right. You know, well, the question is whether you need to update, whether an update to iTunes will eventually, you know, change the, you know, whether you'll be able to sync to it with an older phone. You know, that.
Well, you run that risk if you buy one of these. Yeah. Absolutely. And so I'm probably not advocating this. On the other hand, it sure does open the market for all these. Look at all our friends in Canada. Now they're sitting here and watching, and Apple has announced O2 will be carrying the phone in the UK November 9th. It's going to be in France. It's going to be in Germany, and all our friends now in Canada.
Where's
going,
the deal?
Where's our phone? Or Mexico? Where's our phone?
Yeah, I think the Canadians are always left. I don't know what Apple has against the Canadians. Maybe now that Phil Schiller is living south of the border, you know. Well, he had a bad childhood or something in Saskatchewan or wherever he came from. But they do. They seem to get the iTunes store after everybody else, and they really are sort of like the ugly stepchild.
I'm going to donate this hacked phone to a friend of mine who lives in Canada so that that person can put it on the Rogers Network, and we'll see what happens. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah. Well, I think the key to all this stuff is, once you've got your iPhone exactly in the condition you want it, just never update it again.
Right. But you raise a good point, Alex, is maybe I'll never be able to sync again either.
Which I have to admit, I you know, I've almost never sunk my Trio. So, it, you know, it would be nice, but I'm not used to it.
The past tense, by the way,
past tense was sunk.
I never sunk. I would like to sync my Trio, you know, into the bay, but I was afraid of litter laws. You know?
Well, it seems like there's a couple things you could do. I mean, if you get to a point where, you know, if you're somebody like me who enjoys being in the mode where you just kind of drag music over anyway, I mean, you know, if you're willing to live in this little shadow world and you can be patient, you know, if you wait long enough, stuff will probably come along that will fix your problem.
Well,
you know,
I'll talk when I get to my picks. There are a lot of really neat things you can do with the phone once you've jailbroken it, or whatever the past tense of that is.
Jailbroken.
So we'll talk about that. What do you think about the O2 announcement? £269, including VAT. That's around $550.
And it'll be down to whatever, $400 2 months from now.
Maybe, yeah. Would you buy an iPhone right away?
Not on your life, Governor.
There's some people, you know, there's some people that are going to buy them just like we did. You know, first day out, they're going to go out and get them. I mean, I knew that there was going to be a price drop when I bought it, so it wasn't, you know, wasn't that big of a deal to me. And I think there'll be other people like that. There'll be a lot of people who will buy them at $550, and then they'll be upset, you know, indignant when it drops to $400 or $450.
but in a very reserved sort of way. So
yeah, we are reserved. Yeah. Did you see Bill Maher? Oh my God! Did you see what Bill Maher said about the iPhone buyers?
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I wasn't going to play this because I thought Scott Bourne might have a heart attack if I do, but he's not here right now. So let me just play Bill Maher and his reaction to the iPhone price drop.
Cut the price of the iPhone. Early adopters always pay a premium. Early adopters being a business term meaning dipshits who stand in line for 6 hours for a freaking phone. It's not a price cut. It's a repeal on the nerd tax.
I love that.
If you didn't have to be the first on your block to have the latest gizmo, you'd now have an extra $200 to spend on your imaginary girlfriend.
You gotta love Bill Maher, I tell you.
That's classic.
A repeal on the nerd tax. Well, having paid the nerd tax, I think I'm the only one here who paid that nerd tax. I agree.
I paid for the nerd tax.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
you did too, Chris?
Yeah, and I was in line for 6 hours.
6 hours, me too.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I was only in line for about 15 minutes, but that was good.
Now, here's the really sad part, is I don't even really mind that I paid $200 too much for it.
No, I mean, it's I don't know, what is it? It's like going in and wanting to box with people and wondering why you keep getting a bloody nose. Right. If you're going to try this stuff early on, you're going to pay a premium. That's look at every single piece of technology that's ever come out, and that's always going to be the case. And if you don't have the tolerance for that, you shouldn't buy it.
We boxed with the big boys, and we got our nose broken.
I mean, nobody's got a gun to your head to go out and buy this stuff, you know?
Right.
Except you just don't want to be left behind. You don't want to be left behind of all the cool people.
Which is exactly why nerd tax is the most appropriate term.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think there is.
I can't wait a little bit longer. I've got to make sure certain I'll have this with me.
I do have to admit that there was something that I noticed in airports. I was in a lot of airports since I bought the iPhone. And people who use iPhones, you almost feel like, I didn't feel it for other people, but they seem to feel it for me. Like, they just come over and ask me how it was going with my iPhone. We pull out our iPhones and start looking at them and talking about them. And everybody would be, walking up to you. What do you think of the iPhone? You know, so I think that there was definitely, I think people enjoyed that that's what you get for going in early.
I think there were a couple hundred bucks worth of bragging rights. You got your two months worth of that, and I think it's worth it.
And it's probably worth $200 to finally have something that makes people want to talk to you.
Exactly.
My imaginary girlfriend is so nice to me about it now. I tell you. She really is.
Her name's Charlene.
Any other thoughts about the fact that it's available in Europe now? It's official. I like the name of the event, by the way. Mum's no longer the word. Yeah. It's so British. I say, Mum's no longer the word. It's our event.
Well, no. Do we have dates on the other European markets?
We don't. In fact, it looks like, I'm looking at the BBC story, it looks like they've only announced O2 in England. So we don't even have confirmation that it's T-Mobile in Germany and Orange in France, as we had heard. But right. I can't imagine it'll be much longer.
And then I'm surprised we haven't seen anything in Asia, but it just sounds like they're just going to keep on slowly rolling it out all over the world over the next year and a half.
I think they've got to deal with this crack issue first, though.
Also, I was going to say, how much do you think that affects their decision making?
It's got to impact it a lot. They have to, if they can't stop the cracking, they've got no market. Their carriers are going to certainly not give them the same deal. I don't know what O2 said to Apple. But O2, I'm sure at some point when they sat down at the table, O2 said, well, there's no, it's apparently you don't have to buy it from us anymore. What are we going to do about that, Apple? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, but I think that there's always going to be the risk of when you buy something that's kind of hacked, there's always going to be that risk looming over you that, that it's not going to work somewhere down the road. And I know that's that would keep me from doing it. I just don't have the time to deal with it not working, so I would still, if today I knew that there was a hack available or I could buy the regular iPhone and just run it on AT&T, I'd probably still, no matter how much less my coverage is with AT&T than it was with Verizon, I probably still would do what I'm doing. I don't think I'd want to have a hacked phone where I'm worried about the next time I sync it, it's not going to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. Any other thoughts on that subject before we move on? Nothing. You posted something called Amen, Brother. What is this? Is this for us?
Yeah, it is. Well, I posted it, I think, both to the TWIM list. It was more to the TWIM list than the MacBreak list. But this is on YouTube, and it is it's not as much of a Mac thing. But you, but if you like music, or you're just kind of curious about the biography of music, it is a drum beat from the from a single. I think it's a B side of a single in the 60s.
That's a that great. That video is awesome. I've seen it.
You've heard this?
Unbelievable. It's 18 minutes of showing you where this drum beat that started in the late 60s and all the and how it became really popular in the rap. You know, era.
So it's one beat that everybody's using?
It's all the time. And
you know, there's like the certain beats, like, you know, there's like James Brown beats and stuff that like you're really familiar to you. And this is this one like super obscure drum beat. And he goes through the whole like all the substrata of like where this has appeared over time. And it's not much to watch. I mean, it's, as I remember, it's just a record turning.
You want to listen to it. I mean, it's just on YouTube. He has some kind of like just a record player going around and around and around. But the point is when you listen to it, I played it in the background while I was getting ready this morning. And it was just this amazing tour of all of it. It's just really well produced.
He says it's the world's most important 6-second drum loop. I'm trying to find the loop part. He's talking right now.
Some sort of purple pill. It's been used so much.
If you cut somewhere in the middle, it'll keep on playing it.
Oh, here it is. Oh, let me go back again and play it again.
Good one.
Good part to play, right?
Okay.
I like this guy. And then from 1990.
It's just a little something from NWA.
Yeah. This is like a guy you'd see in the High Fidelity record store.
Yeah,
and then you know, I can hear this.
And I went to his. I actually ended up at his website, and he actually has a lot of other ones about music history and you know the history of Roland and the history of different things, which is you know I found fascinating.
Okay, but we'll put a link in that, and you can listen.
It's really worth listening to. It's as I said, it's everywhere. You know, like I mean, recently, as soon as I heard it, I recognized that. Oh, that's the drum beat that I like so much from Linkin Park's Faint. You know, is that sample.
Right, cool.
You know, and so it's and it's everywhere. Commercials, it's basically kind of the classic drum and bass drum beat, you know. So anyway.
Oh, by the way, the new iTunes, I didn't realize this blocked they call it accidental Linux use.
That's got to be one of the great like oxymorons. Accidental.
I didn't realize my computer had Linux on it.
Stumbled into Linux by accident, but apparently the Linux community responded within seconds. This is so that you could use things like Anapod or Fpod or even Winamp to manage your music. I guess it broke the database file. They changed the code, but the Linux community quickly hacked it back. So I think this is fascinating to watch this cat and mouse game that Apple's playing, and I think Apple must be taking a lesson from this. They haven't won yet. I mean, it doesn't take long at all.
No, and they can't. I mean, with any of this stuff, it's you know, you're fighting 12-year-olds,
right?
And
maybe not even 12-year-olds. Even might be some pretty accomplished programmers. But when something is as desirable as an iPod or an iPhone, you're just not going to win.
Right. Yeah, and I really honestly think that they needed to take a look at what happened in the satellite TV business.
Right.
You know, where that kind of game was going on forever until finally they had to install hardware, you know, to say, no, you have to have a new card now, and we're going to make it so that you have to burn a new EEPROM or something to get this to work.
Right.
And I hope that that doesn't happen, that they are doing some kind of constant checksum on your iPhone or your iPod to make sure that it hasn't changed, and when it does, it suddenly rips it out of there. But maybe the way it goes.
The Apple's got a tough row to hoe because they've got to appease the phone company in this case, or the record companies in the case of iTunes, and they're making these demands. Whether Apple wants to accede to them or not, they still have to do it.
Yeah, well, I think what they've tried to do is pretty much what they did with the iPod, where they just said, oh, yeah, our security is, we're going to make this invisible and nobody will know.
Right.
And I think they hope they could get away with it this time, and they can't.
Did you say you had done all this stuff, and then you did a restore, and it still didn't? It was still you could still do your monkey business with it.
Oh yeah.
See, now that to me is intriguing, because up till now, I think the main thing I suspect that most of what most of us have thought is, well, they need to keep this thing locked up for a variety of, you know, business reasons and because of their relationships with their, you know, vendors. But the other thing is, just think about the unholy hell of support.
right.
trying to deal right. with people. I mean, how many times have you ever had to do support on your website for somebody who's using Firefox?
Right. Oh, all the time. Yeah.
And you're like, no, it's because you have this thing installed and that's right. making your webpage
right.
do this.
Right. And you shouldn't and have to do that. And I understand Apple not wanting to, but you know what? If you hack your phone to this degree, you'd be crazy to ask Apple for support.
I guess so, but yeah, but I mean, I guess what you're just what you guys seem to be describing is a world where the markets are going to march ahead of Apple's own plans,
right?
And theoretically, then somebody's going to go out and buy one of these or give it as a gift.
Well, that's true. You're right. People are buying them who didn't do the hack. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's what you know, like it's like me and weak knees. You know, I'm never going to like call up DirecTV and say, "Why is my TiVo messed up?"
Right?
Because
right.
it's been Frankenstein beyond you know all belief. But yeah, I just have to imagine that's got to be a you know a customer service nightmare for them.
Doesn't stop me from wanting to do it, and you know I think that if you do it, you kind of have to understand that anything and any and these by the way, there's disclaimers everywhere. We don't know what's going to happen when right. there's an update.
Just be careful you don't do any accidental Linux use. That's what you really want.
No
to watch
accidental
for.
Linux use.
Well, I will say, has anybody heard of anybody actually breaking the phone after doing this stuff?
I've heard people say they've bricked the phone, but I, as far as I could tell, you really can't brick it because you can always do a restore.
Yeah, that's what I found as well. And, you know, I've been through the whole terminal hack stuff a few weeks ago when it was really ugly. And I got into some, you know, hairy areas there where I had to back out and restore, and I was always able to do it. And I even tried running the latest installer app, AppTap, on my iPod Touch to see what that would
do. Oh, what happened there?
Oh, bad things happened. It got a couple of minutes in and said, this will take a couple of minutes, and it took 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes. I thought, oh, okay, it's not doing anything. And I finally force quit.
You're a brave man.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought, I didn't pay for it.
It's your job. No, it's your job.
Yeah, so it showed the police plug me into iTunes now, and I tried, and nothing changed. Nothing saw it. I did the forced restart. Nothing changed.
Ooh.
I plugged it into another Mac, and at that point, the other Mac said, oh, I know what you are, and I was able to restore it from there. So even then, when I thought, oh, I am so in the soup,
right.
I was able to get through with the restore.
Give it back to Apple, say, I don't know what happened.
I keep seeing this icon here, and there seems to be a copy of Linux under it.
That was accidental.
I was walking along with my bathrobe was open, I tripped and fell,
whoops.
And I had Linux on my iPod.
It'll happen.
It's one of those things, those emergency room workers hear all the time.
Exactly.
These bicycle handlebars were in the shower, and I slipped, and I did some accidental Linux use.
Well, it's good. Yeah, I think you probably, you know, as long as you can get a Mac to recognize it, it's not so messed up that the Mac can't see it. You're always going to be able to do that to restore it. I've kind of messed mine up. Right. Here's one little tip. If you run AppTap, there's another application called RBT that you can use to rearrange the icons and change them. And it's really nice. I mean, you could totally arrange what your icons look like. You can hide, you know, if you don't use YouTube, you can hide it. However, what you shouldn't do is then turn off the feature that lets you scroll. The summer board lets you scroll because then you can't scroll down and change it. So now I think I'm going to have to restore because I can't actually change the changes because I can't get to that icon because it's below the dock now.
Yeah, so. And there's a danger of it, of going in through AppTap and looking at all that stuff. There, I want everything.
Right, you can
you
fill it up.
Install it all, and you've got 17 launchers on there.
Right.
All of which conflict with each other.
Right. You got to be a little careful.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's pretty neat. I'll talk more about it as my software. It is my pick, but it's not. There's nothing to say at this point. I've said everything. There was a couple of other things I thought about. Oh, yeah. YouTube doesn't work initially after you do the hack, but it's very easy to get it back. I got it working just fine. You know, I think there's some bit that has to be set, believe it or not. It's very trivial. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't. It says, oh, you know, I'm not, you know, I can't go see YouTube. Of course, you do lose visual voicemail, but Apple is clearly planned for this phone to be used with other systems that don't support visual voicemail because it works like a normal cell phone where your phone icon has a red dot if there's a message waiting. Sometimes that dot goes on more often than it ought to. Apparently, there's a fix for that. And finally, you can't use the special Yahoo IMAP server that's set up for an iPhone. You have to just go through your standard POP account to your Yahoo. It took me a while trying to get into Yahoo before I realized that. So you don't have the push mail anymore. But, I mean, these are very minor things. In most ways, it's exactly like the iPhone, except that it says T-Mobile on it.
And if you're really committed to having T-Mobile or whatever, then that makes...
Well, I already have a T-Mobile account, and I've been forwarding the calls from T-Mobile to AT&T, which I'm sure is double costing me. So,
Hey, Leo, this is really way, way off what you're talking about, but you're getting pretty geeky. Well, maybe we could play, do an episode of Let's Pretend It's 7 Weeks Ago.
Okay.
Do you remember that game?
Yeah, let me see. Wait a minute, see
game,
if I can
it's
find
it. Game all America is playing. It's called Let's Pretend It's 7 Weeks Ago. And it's a game where we act like you know, because Merlin got his iPhone 7 weeks after everyone else, and he's just realizing lots of cool stuff.
Yes.
I would be happy to do a quick swag segment on some stuff I've landed on that I really like a lot.
Oh, good. All right. Well, let me get my. We have to queue up the Let's Pretend It's 7 Weeks Ago game show music.
Oh, excellent!
I believe I have that. If I could just find it here. Let's see. Let's pretend it's. It should be alphabetical, right? Let's pretend it's 7 weeks ago. Shoot. I'll just edit this out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, so here we are. Once again, it's time for a game that we like to call Let's Pretend It's 7 Weeks Ago. First of all, a case. I got a case that I love.
Yes. Which case? Because I haven't been able to find a perfect case yet.
All my nerd friends get the rubbery one.
That's what I have. Yeah.
It's the
DLO jam case. Because it has the very fine cord management solution.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's nice. But the problem is I'm a fat man who wears jeans, and I would never be able to get that
get
in
it
out
in.
Of my...
You can't get in.
I went with the Casemate.
Ooh.
The Casemate signature leather case is really cool. It's very slim. If you do, you might want to go Google on Casemate signature.
Apple sells them, I think, because they're very popular.
Right? I had to go to the AT&T store to find one.
Oh, okay.
They sent me. But I love this thing. And I use it in combination with the, what's it called? The crystal film set. You know, the little plastic covery thing for the actual
display.
Do you
use that? Really?
I do, because I want to keep this nice. And I don't want it to get all scratchy.
You know,
Oh, and now it's time to play the game. Let's pretend it's 7 weeks ago. And now here's your host, Merlin Mann.
Thank you, Leo, and welcome this week to Let's Pretend It's 7 Weeks Ago.
That was a little bit of a lag there. I accidentally had some Linux there.
I think you had a little accidental Linux. Well, I'm very excited about this case that I've gotten. Case that I've gotten is by Casemate.
Yes, I think we heard that part.
I have no idea what you're going to
jump ahead now. I'm not going to edit this at all. This is...
joke
live to tape is what we call it.
I love this thing, and it's very slim. It's very easy to get up. Now you can put that really dorky screw on, like I want this hanging on my belt thing.
I don't like that
will ensure you never ever get laid.
Right.
I did not put that on.
No, don't do that.
But it's very slim, and I like it a lot. Now, Leo, I've been away for a while.
Did you get red, pink, black, green?
I got black. I got the Phantom Black,
the signature black,
and good, and it smells good, and it's really nice and easy to use, and it's got just enough kind of protection around the edges where if you dropped it, like, it's not going to save your life, but it would definitely take the edge off.
Did you get the flip cover with it or no?
No, I did not.
Okay.
No, that's a little too Star Trek for me.
Yeah.
I
actually have the Casemate. My second phone, my original iPhone's in the Casemate.
the legal one.
The legal one. Legal. The unhacked iPhone is in the Casemate.
Now, I don't know if you talked about this while I was gone, Leo, but have you talked about the, what are they called, the Edemotics? Have you talked about this? Do you know about the hackable headphones?
Oh, yes, we did. The site you go to, we talked about it last week. Did you do that?
My good friend Matt Howie bought these and didn't like them, so he gave them to me, and I'm loving them.
So they take the Apple connector and the Apple mic, and they put it on your Edemotics earbuds.
Exactly. So you get the little, with the little weird kind of triple dip thing on the top for sticking in your ear.
Yeah.
And it's been working famously. The part that continues to blow me away is that I use it, you know, as, you know, for hands-free
I love
use.
It.
And it's, apparently it doesn't sound too bad. People aren't complaining.
It sounds great. I use it all the time.
They patch it into the cord, or do they actually run it into the actual headphones? Do you see any kind of lump where they did the...
it's exactly what I was expecting. But if you look at it, they must be opening up the actual ear thing.
My sense is it white all the way up to the Edemotics?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. No.
My sense is they put it into the Edemotics. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't think these are the super duper high end ones that you use.
No, that's right. They use the lower end.
These are ER6i.
Sixes. Yeah, they use the sixes.
But
they sound great, don't they? Yeah, they're good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else I've got here on Let's Pretend It's 7 Weeks Ago.
Only 1 week old. That wasn't too bad.
That wasn't too bad.
No.
But the case was a big one for me. Like you, I wanted one that would be kind of cool.
And that concludes this edition of Let's Pretend It Was 7 Weeks Ago with your host, Merlin Mann. Join us next week where we'll pretend it was 6 weeks ago.
Okay. Mark Goodman, Bill Todman production.
This is Johnny Olson speaking.
Mark Goodson, right?
Mark Goodson, Bill Todman. Is that it? You got it. Watched way too much game show TV in your youth.
Now, were you around back in the day? You're a little too young for this. You weren't around during the 21 scandal, right? That was before
your time. It was $21,000 or $64,000.
I think it was Jack Barry in 21.
Oh, that was a later one. Yeah.
$64,000.
That was in the 50s. It was the quiz show scandals.
Yeah, that's before your time, though, right?
Yeah. Mm. What movie begins with it's a quiz kid?
There's Quiz Show. There's that John Turturro, Ralph Fiennes movie.
Yeah,
quiz
that's
show.
A great movie.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. So, digging our way back out of this rat hole, Mark Cuban has gone Mac. Does anybody care?
That's just talk. Huh? But I don't really. It's just crazy talk.
Crazy talk. He bought Vista, and it was so slow that he went out and got a copy of CPU Magazine with the Vista tricks. And then he said everything froze and crashed less often, but it's still a problem. So we went out.
The best part of this whole story, though, was in Gruber linked to it. This quote from Gruber. Did you catch this?
No. What did Gruber say?
There's a whole class of recent switchers who define "quote unquote" Apple fanboy as anyone who's been an enthusiastic Mac user since before I switched to the Mac.
Exactly.
I think that's dead true.
Yeah.
Now, can you guys explain to me, as the geeks that you are, why Vista seems to be the line in the sand? That I mean, were people waiting for XP and thinking, no, really, it's going to get better, and now it isn't, and finally I give up? Or I mean, why didn't they give up 2 years ago?
That's a good question. I don't know. Vista's no worse than XP was, so I don't know. I don't know what happened. I think that one of the things
is that a lot of people are feeling safer with going to the Mac because they have an Intel. They can go back to Windows if they need to. And I think I've talked to some people who, you know, would never consider just committing to it, but they felt like, well, I can use it as a PC if I don't like the OS X, you know, interface. And of course that never actually happens. You know, they run parallels so they can run their C apps, and then they just slowly move over, and then it's over.
Well, I think what's interesting about that is, yes, we're seeing the geeks start to do that because they understand that they can use an Intel machine and run Windows, but sort of the great unwashed has no idea. You know, I mean, time and again, you may tell them, say, no, really, you can run Windows on this thing. Like, what? Huh? But I think the fact that we're getting people in the media who are PC folks who are now starting to move over, maybe that will be some kind of trickle down where they, you know, maybe the message still won't get to them that, yes, you can run Windows on here. But now that people they admire say, no, really, the Mac OS is okay, perhaps then they think, well, yeah, no, I don't want to jump to Vista anyway, and I do need to buy a new computer, so maybe I'll give the Mac thing a try. And somewhere along the line, they discover that they can run Windows.
Would you use VMware or Parallels now, Chris?
I've tried them both, you know, and I'm comfortable with either one.
Yeah, I think they're very similar. There are people who will want VMware because of the dual processor support and the better 3D card support. And when, you know, everybody says, oh, it's faster, but it's faster because of that multiprocessor support. Yeah. I don't think it's inherently faster.
Yeah, if I need to do serious work, I just go to boot camp.
Right.
Yeah, we've had guys testing a lot of the stuff, and even with, like, running Softimage XSI, which is about as hard... is going to hit the hardware about as hard as you can. We found that Parallels, and we didn't try it with VMware, but we did. Parallels worked fairly well. You know, we didn't hit it as hard as we could. I tend to go back to boot camp if I'm going to go into a really big PC app. But I have to say, if you're not doing graphics on it, like really heavy duty graphics, I don't think there's any reason to go into boot camp. To be honest, I mean, I think that one of these emulators is just fine. I can't imagine you'd really notice the performance.
I'm seeing a lot of press these days kind of defending NBC against Apple, saying, you know, this is the latest kind of revisionist look at what happened with NBC and Apple. And I guess NBC is still planning not to be on iTunes and move to Hulu and Amazon. But some
that'll work real well.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think that's crazy. That's cracked. In fact, Fox, there was a rumor that Fox would also make the move, and Fox said, no, we're happy on iTunes. But I can understand them wanting to price stuff the way they want to price it. And Apple, you know, when Apple says, no, you price it the way we say, I could see how a business might feel like that's unfair. And
I would only argue that they haven't done anything that actually works, and Apple has. So they might want to take a little advice.
It's impractical. You know, let's put it this way. It's impractical to leave iTunes But it might not be. I mean, I can understand from a business point of view. They just, you know, they want to have a little more flexibility in pricing. Is that so bad?
You think it's just they're trying to find something that's just plausible enough that they can, you know, be like, oh, well,
we
you know, Jimmy, you know, Jimmy, the guy who sweeps up after everyone leaves, he'll go out with me.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, the, it seems like eventually you've got to come back to iTunes. It just seems sensible.
And if they do, Apple will be far less forgiving than they were the first time around. Right. I mean, you know, if Hulu or Hula or whatever it is and Amazon and all that stuff, if it doesn't work, coming back to, you know, I just can't imagine Steve really being nice about that.
Yeah, I think that these guys have seen sort of the whirlpool that the music industry has gone into, you know, and they're sort of standing off from the whirlpool in their ships and saying, well, we're not going to let that happen to us. And they're starting to get sucked in,
right.
and they're trying to get out, and then they do sort of these things like, oh, no, we won't be on iTunes anymore. Okay, well, what are you going to do that was any better than what you did before? We're going to stream it with commercials,
yeah.
right? And I know where BitTorrent is, so
right.
I'll just do
that's
that.
That's the mistake, and, yeah. And that's the thing Cory Doctorow always points out is, you know, you got to remember people can get it for free.
Yeah.
Your real competition is not iTunes or some other thing. It is BitTorrent. It's free.
And there's a lot of people that I know that if they can't find it on iTunes, you know, as far as they're concerned, it's fair game.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I agree with you. Totally. I have that same feeling. It's sort of like, I am willing to do it if I can do it through iTunes. I will get my subscription for such and such a season. It's convenient for me. Great. If you make it inconvenient for me,
right.
I could TiVo it, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to go to BitTorrent.
Right. Well, that's exactly what I've done with The Office. I bought the first three seasons, perfectly willing to buy season four. But if it's not available on iTunes, I can't use Hulu, and I can't because I'm a Mac user, and I can't use Amazon. So,
and the thing is that once even if you get people excited about downloading this stuff, there may be a whole new set of people who weren't downloading before that will now. You know, because especially on the Mac side, you know, and what you have is, I mean, you know, especially with something like Heroes, I was paying for it, or I could, you know, download, you know, HD versions for free. You know, it's not even that it's parody. I mean, the stuff you're downloading for free is higher quality than the stuff that we were paying for.
I think everybody, well, this is probably a stupid thing to say, but I suspect everybody has their own little personal cascade. You know, I think for where they choose to go and find things. And let's be honest, going to Sam Goody is not on the cascade for most people. There's a certain number of places where you're going to check. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine the day before last about how, you know, this is really embarrassing, but I have gone and bought stuff off of iTunes because I didn't want to go find the record in my basement. I don't even touch CDs anymore.
Right, right.
It's just faster. You know, now that, of course, there are other outlets that are even faster and cheaper than that. But I have gotten in the habit of buying things or of obtaining things online. And boy, again, this is a big rerun of ours. But just gosh, put a cash register on that. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm spending more on iTunes than I ever have before.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's called point of access, ease of access.
Just go. Oh, you know, we want to get this Weeds. Looks like a great show. Let's buy a season of it.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, I bought a lot of crap that way, actually.
And now that I have the Wi-Fi store on my iPod Touch, yeah, I just started up
again.
There was a lull for a while, but over the weekend, I
downloaded. Did you use that at Starbucks?
No, I didn't use it at Starbucks, but it works now over Wi-Fi.
Anywhere?
Yeah.
So you're buying stuff on your iPod?
I'm buying stuff on my iPod. I have a cut from an Ethiopian artist that I'd heard, and I thought, oh, this sounds good.
Isn't
I previewed
great?
Something on another album. I went, okay, I'll buy that, and I'll buy this, and I'll
it's
buy this.
It's a very smart model. Make it easy, make it available, make it possible, frankly, to make an impulse purchase, and people will.
I wish they'd bring it to the Apple TV.
I do too.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the one that's crazy is that you know you have it working on the iPod and you just can't. That's what you want to do with the Apple TV, and it's just so frustrating.
I'm sure that's coming. What prompted this is an article in the New York Times by David Carr. I'm going to see if I can channel David. The title is "Steve Jobs: I Came, I Saw, I Caved." And his point is that Apple is saying consumers want simple pricing, except when it comes to their own products. And he quotes the recent price drop. He says, I went into an Apple store and the signs on the table were all wrong. And there's a guy, a clerk standing next to it saying the signs are wrong. The price just dropped. Buy now. And he says, Apple wants flexible pricing. Why is it so difficult for them to accept that others might want the same thing on the iTunes Store?
I think that gets into that gets where it becomes more, when it becomes more complicated is when it is no longer that flinch. You know, buying an iPhone.
Well, I don't know. You could look at $499 on the store and make that decision.
Yeah, I just think that it would. I mean, I think you'd sell more of the cheaper stuff and less of the more expensive stuff.
Well,
and
so what? I mean, that's NBC's decision, right?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Is there a technical reason? I don't think there's a technical reason. You could have variable pricing on the iTunes Store.
Yeah, I don't think there's any technical reason that you could.
No, and they honestly do. You know, at one time they said, okay, all albums are going to be $9.99. Well, they're not now.
They're not, right. Yeah,
they're
right.
All over the map now.
Carr says, eBay proved people will not only track prices closely, but act in their own consuming self-interest. The web can easily enable infinitely customized pricing. Look at eBay. I mean, that does make sense. I'm not sure why Apple... This is another, I think, another case of Steve's, Jesuit point of view. And he's just made it up in his mind, no buttons. He's made it up in his mind, no variable pricing. I don't know if he's really thinking about... I should never say Steve's not thinking, because he's clearly outthought me about 1,000 times. But I just wonder why he's so insistent on this.
Well, I mean, I have to admit, as a consumer, you know, the thing is, the price...
You can deal with it. Come on, you just look at the price.
The price would only go up. They're not going to make them cheaper than 99 cents. And a lot of that
has to... Well, at their peril, maybe they will. In fact, one of the proposals the record companies said was, we'd like to charge less for catalog and more for new.
But the issue is there's a transaction fee of 25 cents every single song. And so you can't make it much cheaper before, unless you move out of using credit cards. You know, I mean, that's why, for instance, like I haven't heard this from anyone, but my theory is why you don't get charged immediately. You don't get that email.
Yeah, no, I heard that. I think you're right. Yeah,
is they're stacking up all of the as many orders. If you're a constant order, they'd rather run the charge when it's $10 or $20 or $30 rather than $1 every single time. They save a lot of money that way. But I think that the problem is that there's a floor. 99 cents is pretty close to that floor. Maybe they can drop it by 10 cents, but that's about it. 10 or 15 cents. And you know, when you look at that, also, when we go back to thinking about the artist, you know, which the RIA loves to bring up, they're already down to pennies.
Right.
You know, like the artist is already walking away with one.
Yeah, it's not the artist; it's the labels, and the only people making money in the iTunes Store are the labels. Let's face that. I mean, that's clear.
And I still think. I mean, I think I've said this 1,000 times, but I still think that the real revolution is the artists realizing they don't need the labels,
right?
You know, and Apple's building a pipeline. I think that's something that they, if they're not afraid of, they should be. You know, I mean, you know, if Apple gets pushed too hard, they just stop making deals. They don't stop, but they start making more and more deals with independent artists and independent producers. And we're not talking about like little, it's not like some guy in a garage band. You're talking about a lot of producers that are here in LA or in San Francisco or whatever that have worked on TV, that are tired of working on TV or think that there's a new business model. And are producing TV quality kind of stuff. There was a thing called Quarter Life. Did you guys see this news about a show called Quarter Life that did a pilot and then was canceled? And now the guys have picked it up on MySpace. You know, these are TV producers producing a TV show and
they're good ones too. They're the guys who did My So-Called Life and 30 something.
Right.
And it's interesting though. It's all about a blogger, so it's got a very net focused point of view anyway.
So what you're really looking at is if that's a wall that, if cracks start to form, is much more problematic for the MPAA or the RIAA than any of these price, you know, arguments.
As long as we're quoting the New York Times, our third New York Times article, you should have read the Times this week. It was great about Apple. This is Randall Strauss writing. He is a business professor at San Jose State University. I love the opening paragraph. If you're the owner of a Windows PC who's looking for a replacement computer, the choices are grim. You could step into the world of hurt that is Vista, or you could seek out a new machine that still comes loaded with the comparatively ancient Windows XP. Maybe you might say the moment's arrived to take a look at Mac. And his point is that Apple has a very small, closing fast window of opportunity. He says once the Vista machine cranks up into full gear, it's going to be tough. But now is the time for Apple. You agree? Chris Bean, you think this is it?
The Apple? No.
No, you disagree.
No, I think he's talked through that.
You don't agree either, Alex.
No, I mean, I don't think there's any kind of... I think that Apple just...
Apple has yet to capitalize on this. I mean, if you look at the pure
market
share...
I mean, they have capitalized on the 15% of the PowerBooks, or 15% of the laptops out there are being sold are Macs. 17% now. So the thing, and I think it's, you know, they're growing very fast. I mean, I don't think that, you know, I don't think Apple's designed to be... you know, a company that has 50% of the market share or 60% of the market share. And that isn't, to get to that market share is incredibly difficult because a lot of that, it's including business computers and you know, IT people who don't have any interest in moving over. And, you know, it's not like they could just get all the home users and they'd be at 60%.
He says the problem is Apple's lack of retail presence. And that's because nobody on the board is dedicated to the Mac. There's somebody in charge of, or the executive team is somebody in charge of
the
iPod.
Mac's lack of retail presence.
Yeah.
Except for all those Apple stores, right?
Except for all those Apple stores. That's the only
place. I mean, if you go into any other store, you know, even CompUSA that sells them, it's, you know, there's a lot of Windows machines, and in the corner, there's the Macs.
What are the name brands that they're selling in those stores?
No, you're right. They sell Sony, they sell Toshiba.
The thing is,
it seems like it's a weird kind of like not really fair fight to say Apple, one of the most strongly recognized brands in the world, but against all these Johnny No Name, you know, computer. Because I mean, we're not talking about Dells and what are the big names in PCs right now? Like there's Dell, obviously.
There's a CompUSA that is a block away from the Apple store in San Francisco. So it's a flagship Apple store, and there's a CompUSA that is one block away. This CompUSA has probably 800 square feet dedicated to Apple.
Huh.
You know, now Sony...
In the totally cherry part of the store, where you first walk in.
When you first walk in, and then another section down below, you know, right when you come down the escalator. It is the first thing that you see when you come into CompUSA, and it does very, very well. That even with Apple a block away, you know, which is insane, you know, and Sony, you know, they have their section in the store, which is the 4x2 feet that their two laptops are sitting on.
They've got the Sony store at the Metreon, though.
But no one would ever buy it. I mean, I guess you go and look there. I see people buying there, and you're like, what the heck? I mean,
no,
it's
but
so
there's
expensive.
A HP is the big name that's in the CompUSA and other stores. That's a pretty big name.
I didn't mean to sound like
but, you know, but HP doesn't have a dedicated rep. When you walk into an Apple store, and I think Apple does this well, I think that when you walk into an Apple section of CompUSA, there is someone there that actually knows how Mac is.
All right, if you say this, then why isn't Apple's share growing faster? I mean, admittedly, laptop share is growing, but desktop's not growing, is it?
I think it is. I think it's. I don't know what the number is, but I think it's at 6 or 7 or 8%, which is twice what it was.
No, it went down slightly.
So it's.
It's down. It's down below 3% again.
Is it?
Yeah, the last I saw.
I don't know.
Now, there's a problem with that because it does include business sales and includes sales outside the U.S., which, frankly, Apple is not as much of a presence outside the U.S.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like competing. I'm sorry to sound so dismissive because I don't know anything about any of this, but it seems like it's like trying to compete with like fleet sales. If you took out in automobile sales, if you took out the sales that General Motors and Ford make to rental car companies, like what would their sales look like right now?
No, absolutely. Taurus
and this is and this
one.
Is they're just coming in. They're just I'm guessing they're just checking off a box and a whole bunch of this they squirt a bunch of computers into there, and, you know. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem as it's a commodity. It's a commodity product.
I mean, if you look at BMW, keeps up the fast pace. BMW's market share for the first 7 months was up to 7%.
Right.
You know. I mean. You know. Right. So the thing is that you know, I don't think Apple's trying to cover the entire market. They're trying to cover one segment of that market.
What is their domestic home market share? I mean, that's the one that really, that's the number that really should matter, not business.
Good question.
But I wonder, I would bet they're 30 or 40% in the home in the U.S. But I don't
know. I think once again, if you cut it against individual users in the U.S., I think your percentages are much higher. My anecdotal, you know, how many Macs I see, or at least, and I know laptops are higher, but how many Macintoshes you see, you know, traveling or whatever is much higher than, you know, 15%. I mean, it's like half in most airports, you know, when I'm walking through.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just the airports I'm going to. But, I mean, it's you know, it's an awful lot.
Does Chris have a number on that? Do you happen to know that, Chris?
No number on that.
I'm desperately looking quickly on the net. I don't see anything.
Yeah, but I do agree with you, Merlin, that it's...
That's an interesting way.
You look at what people are really using versus what somebody's forced to use at their, you know, at the factory. People
or
are
what,
buying.
Or again, I mean, it's also you can find lots of people out there that are still doing Windows servers, you know, because that's what they've always bought. And yeah. I think I realize that we're cutting this a little bit thin, but I think it would be kind of interesting to see what the sales would be on people who are paying out of their own pocket for a
right.
computer.
Here's
that's
fourth. Here's Q4 2006 U.S. only. The Mac sales fell a full percentage point to 5.1% of the U.S. But again, this nobody's breaking it out business versus home sales.
Yeah, and so. I think that laptop number is important because increasingly people are going with laptops rather than getting a desktop system.
If you're going to buy a desktop, why? And there's no competition here. Like if you're on the fence and you're thinking, oh gosh, I know how to use Windows. I've used it my whole life. I can go buy this $35 tower machine.
That's
or
the
I can
problem.
Spend $2,000 on a Mac.
I had somebody call me on the radio show, and I was really I had no response. They said, you know, I'm looking at a Dell Core 2 and a MacBook Pro, and comparably priced, there's a $2,000 price difference. I, you know, as much as I'd like to buy the Mac, is it worth $2,000 more? And I don't think you could say it. I don't know. Can you say it is? I don't know. It is for me, obviously. It is for us, but.
If that's still a question to you, then the answer is absolutely no.
Right.
I know that sounds like kind of stupid, like, you know, shopping mall Zen. But like, if you still have a question in your mind whether there's any comparison, you should definitely buy the PC. No question.
Well, maybe not. Maybe you just don't know that about the difference.
Yeah, but see, that's what I'm saying. And like, it's part of it. So for the longest time, even though I've used a Mac like all the time, almost exclusively since 1987, it wasn't really until about the last 3 or 4 years since OS X matured that I've really felt good about saying to garden variety users, yeah, this is something that you should use. You know, I think it's still an easy default to just get Windows. Your stuff still theoretically works as badly or as well as it did before, and you save yourself a couple $1,000. You know,
that's the thing.
Like, why buy the store brand if you can't taste the difference with the generic?
And that's true, but I have to admit that it's just I can't. I value my time. That's all.
Right. I value your time too, Alex.
As soon as I add value to my time,
that's a good point.
$2,000 becomes really cheap, you know, because you know I look at it like kind of like I don't want to worry about, you know, all the things that we worry about related to my one PC. It causes enough trouble to make up for all the other Macs in the
office. I value my joy. I value the fact that I genuinely. Really, really am excited about using a Mac. And it's the years that I was using a PC primarily for programming, you know, Cold Fusion on a PC. Those were not joyful days for me. It was like...
do with a Cold Fusion, too. I mean, it might not just...
Oh, man, it was just insult to injury.
Right.
It's before I learned PHP. What can I say? But no, but it's... I don't... anyway, this is such a, you know, what... This is one of those classic things, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it is funny, as people point out, it is kind of funny that people who are really like just crazy anti-Mac, they get one and they use it, and all of a sudden they're not so crazy anti-Mac anymore.
Right.
Well, I think also
they're not a fanboy.
Yeah, no.
Right. Only those fanboys, those people who liked it 2 years ago. Those are the guys who are
those guys are crazy.
Guys who've been not wasting time for 20 years.
I think also when we look between the laptop and the desktops, I think that the only people that really need a desktop are gamers and graphics professionals. I mean, I really don't think that there's anything else. If you're not doing one of those two things, I don't know what a desktop gives you that a laptop doesn't.
Yeah, and I have to say, even though I have a MacBook Pro, the MacBook is the one that gets used the most because it's light, it's easy, and it does 99% of what I want to do anyway.
Right.
So maybe it's just that's maybe you're overbuying anyway.
Well, and I think this is going to be a problem for, I think this is the problem for the PC industry in general, is that there's no real reason to upgrade if you're not doing those two things, you know? And so Excel is running as fast now as it ran, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, you know? And so that's the problem that you're going to get into. And what Apple's kind of, you know, what it rides the wave on is this idea that we're going to give you applications that require you to upgrade. I mean, you know, you look at GarageBand or the new Logic or the, you know, or any of the, even iMovie, you know, all of those things press the computer to do a lot more and require you to consider whether you need a new computer.
All right, gang, we're going to do our picks because the show's been getting longer and longer every week. And I realize it's because we discuss, and then we do the picks. So let's interrupt this fine discussion, and it has been a great discussion, and get to our software picks. I've already started mine, so let me just finish up what I was saying. If you do have an iPhone and you want to jailbreak it or just want to add third-party apps to it, clearly the best way to do it right now is Null River's App Tap. At iPhone.nullriver.com/beta. I realize it's risky to do this perhaps, although again, I think a restore is going to fix anything you've done. I'm not talking about necessarily unlocking the thing, although it's a first step to unlocking it, but just the wide variety of applications. A couple of my favorite applications I'm using, it adds a voice recorder, a pretty capable voice recorder to the phone, something that was missing and turns out not to be such a difficult thing to do. You record in, I think, it's a VMR format. It's a format that QuickTime has no problems with, but it is not an MP3 or WAV. Quality's not super great, but it's good enough. It's called VNotes, and you can even email yourself. Let me just play back a VNote. I don't know if you'll be able to hear how this sounds. Let's see. Cancel this. You can also email them to yourself, which is really neat. Speaking of emailing yourself, SendSong, Erica Siddon's great application, allows you to email anything in your iPod playlist on the iPhone, but also take anything on the playlist and make it a ringtone just by moving it over to the ringtone. Very slick.
To-do list app?
There is a to-do list app, which it's fine. I mean, it gets the job done. It doesn't seem to sync with anything, and I think that's kind of a limitation. Another limitation of the phone itself is when you email your pictures from the iPhone, it reduces them to 640 by 480, which is very annoying. There's an application also, I think Erica's called Send Pics, that will send them in full format. So the full 2-megapixel pic gets sent out. There's also a Flickr application that does one-touch upload to Flickr, which is really nice. It actually replaces the camera phone application. It goes on and on. There's dozens of them, even some pretty geeky ones. There's games. There's silly ones. It's a neat application. It's AppTap is its name, but you get it from iPhone.nullriver.com/beta. It's free, and it has so far survived 7.4.2. It survived restores. It works pretty well, and I haven't had any problems with it. And it's free. And that's my pick. Chris Breen, I didn't warn you, but do you have a pick for us? Something you're
I do, because I'm going to piggyback on yours.
Okay.
And one application I'm going to ask you to look at once you do the app tap is Frots.
Yes.
I love Frots. and Frots is a Z code interpreter that you can put on your iPhone so you can play Zork and all those interactive fiction games that we played way back in the day when we didn't have those fancy pictures those kids today have. And it will improve your typing skills as well because you spend a lot of time typing
north,
in commands
west.
Like... Go look under the Parcheesi, and then the iPhone responds, huh? And you say, no, look around the... What?
I really enjoy this. There's a new application, also part of the community sources, that is actually the first three Zork games all bundled together. How did you get new Frots games in there?
There's an FTP site that has interactive fiction. So if you just
excellent.
Google FTP... IF or interactive fiction, you will find a long list of this stuff.
And then how did you FTP them over? Did you get them on the desktop and then copy them? Or?
No, actually what I did is once I installed AppTap, I then installed OpenSSH. Once you do that, you can mount the phone via transmit.
Right.
And so you use this secure
stuff
FTP,
over.
And then you just drag the stuff over where you want it.
Excellent. I'll have to do that. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, it's very easy.
Yeah. And as I said, there is a new community sources, which you should look at. It just came out a couple of days ago that has all of the Zork games on it. Different interpreter, but the same idea.
Cool.
Frots, F-R-O-T-Z, again, part of the Null River iPhone package. Alex Lindsay, you got a pick for us?
Yep, I'm not piggybacking on you at all. In fact, I'm going for an Alex pick. It's about 1.5 Alexes.
Ooh.
Yeah, so
$1,000, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who
are. It's 1 point. Yeah, one and a quarter. It's $8.95. And this is a program called Modo, and Modo is a new version that just got released 3.0.1, I guess. And this is from a company called Luxology, and what it is it's a modeler that just keeps on adding new things. So 3D modeling tends to be everybody has a lot of 3D programs have Their program is kind of like a department store. You know, you've got modeling, you've got animation. So you have to build the objects, you have to put textures on them, so or make them, you know, give them surfaces. You have to create the lighting, then you have to animate them. And building all those tools can be very, can take a long time. What Modo is really primarily just designed to build the objects, put some surfaces on them, do some simple animation, and do some great rendering. And because they've stayed really focused on that, and these guys have a lot of experience, it's probably the cleanest modeler out there. So if you want to build 3D objects, and there's a demo there, you can download and check it out. But it runs. It also runs really, really well on the Mac. It is cross-platform, but it is. It's just a really, really nice interface. And as I said, we use a lot of different things. We use Cinema 4D for a lot of our general stuff. We use Softimage on the PC. But when it comes to modeling, I've really started to do more and more just in Modo, and it's just a really, really great application for those of those listening that are really into 3D.
Cool. Finally, last but not least, Merlin Mann.
As you know, Leo, I am incredibly baked on cold medicine right now, so I may need your guidance. Have we done Acorn already?
I don't believe so. It doesn't ring a bell.
Well, my flying meat, I did not do Acorn.
We have done no flying meat programs. Did you do it?
I downloaded it, but I didn't actually. Oh, no, I think I mentioned it, but I haven't actually gotten to play with it yet.
Well, then let's talk about it. What is Acorn?
Gus Mueller. I feel like I must have mentioned this already, so I'll just mention it very quickly and then maybe do a little one. But if you haven't tried Acorn yet, do give it a try. It's by Flying Meat, flyingmeat.com, and it's a very simple stripped down. I would say it's a Photoshop replacement. For Photoshop, it's Photoshop for the rest of us. Let me put it that way. Very simple subset of commands. Really, it's almost like Markdown for images. Super simple, one little tool palette for doing all your stuff. I'm almost certain that I've done this one before.
I don't know. I'm searching MBW Picks of the Week. Let me go to MBW Picks and see.
I don't think you have. In that case,
let me rhapsodize. So we've talked before about stuff like Sketch and how awesome Sketch is for doing screenshots, because increasingly this is the way we communicate with each other. We take screenshots and we send it to each other. We post it on Flickr in defiance of their terms of service. But we, communication is becoming much more visual for a lot of us. Now, the thing is, if you want to do little kind of bits of stuff to digital photos or to simple graphics, you got to fire up this bajillion-dollar program to go in and like fix levels in Unsharp Mask, right? And it's a huge pain in the butt. To the rescue comes boy genius Gus Mueller with a program called Acorn, which just came out a few weeks ago. And this is a very simple, it's flyingmeat.com/Acorn, very stripped down interface for dealing with your images. That said, it's very powerful.
I know. You did Fly Gesture. That's what you did.
Oh, I did Fly Gesture. That's another good one. But this is, I guess I would just say, go and have a look at this. It's got a demo you can download. I'm finding it very easy in terms of just having a super fast opening application that just does the stuff that I need to do to most of my images. And it's all the stuff, the palette. It's got a single palette for move, select, draw, erase, fill, gradient, and so on. All the stuff that you've become familiar with but exhausted by in Photoshop,
that
a lot of
great.
That is right in here.
That looks cool.
And it's integrated with stuff like, well, integrated. It's got a link to Flickr Uploader, for example. So what I do a lot is I'll do basic messing around in iPhoto, open it in Acorn, say edit in external application to open it in Acorn, and then I'll just send it right to Flickr Uploader from Acorn. So anyway, it's a nice little, the introductory price is $39.95, which is like what? Like one fiftieth of what Photoshop? Are you looking at it, Alex?
Oh, it's cool.
It's got layers, which is neat.
So, well, it's got layers. It's a little like, I mean, this is I don't know if they're using a lot of the core image stuff, but it does seem like we're getting more and more of these applications on the Mac where you get a bunch of these little things.
It is GPU powered. I know that kind of thing interests you.
Right. Well, one of the things that's interesting about that is it means that your plugins happen immediately. So while you're working on them with Photoshop, you know, you get those little blocks that go all the way across when you apply the plugin. And here you're really getting a real-time performance. The other thing that I think is interesting is, did you see this? That when you apply the filters, you can actually apply a group of filters one after another.
Wow. It's almost like Automator, where you can add other filters and chain them together.
Yeah, which is
This is pretty.
That's a really great idea, and so it's a pretty nifty little application.
And it does screen grabs too. I didn't know that. I've still been using Sketch. I love Sketch, but this apparently you can do screen grabs with Acorn as well.
Wow.
So it could be all in one little package. And I mean, obviously, it's not going to be a quote unquote replacement for Photoshop, but Photoshop has got to be one of the most notorious, like way beyond 80/20 applications ever. There's like seven things I use in Photoshop. And, you know, and this one's the Price is Right, and it's got a lot of good stuff in it.
Yeah, I think Photoshop really is aimed at the professional. And I think that for us, I mean, we use it a lot. None of these would really be a solution for that. But I think that for the average person who wants to do just some image editing, you know, these new GPU / core image applications, I think, are just incredible.
It's got resizing, all the basic things.
Yeah, drawing. All the basic stuff. All the stuff, as Merlin said, you know, 95% of what the average user would want is probably,
That's impressive. Yeah. Look at all the effects.
And the effects are kind of geeky. The effects are kind of geeky, you know, so the there's a lot of the stuff that the Photoshop has there. And then you go into like high dynamic range and you'll see source, A top, and, you know, minimum maximums that are those minimum and maximums. I'm assuming are floating point, which means that, you know, they're having some fun with that. So
unsharp mask. I mean, this is pretty amazing. Wow.
If you're, I would say, for example, like if you're doing stuff with just noodling around on your computer or you're doing basic fixes on your digital photos, I've got to think this is more than enough firepower for the average digital photo user.
But does it have goo so that my plastic surgeon can use it? That's
right, Mr. Laporte. We're going to remove your jowls and pull up the sides.
Look
like
at
so.
This. It's so beautiful. You look like a woman now.
Well, especially what's interesting about the core image stuff, and this is how Apple, you know, can kind of create a Photoshop without actually creating it, is what's interesting is that as Apple improves the tools that are available in core image, a lot of these little applications are just going to get better.
What's also an interesting strategy, don't create a Photoshop, just let 1,000 flowers bloom, give them the tools to make it easy to create clones, and then you don't even have to worry.
And
Adobe can't say anything because, well, you didn't actually go into competition with them.
And I don't think that any of these are real competition to Photoshop, but I think that they definitely are competition.
I think they're competition. I don't think they're replacements. I think they're competition.
I think that they make a big difference on the Elements crowd.
Yeah. Do they still sell Elements?
Crowd, he said dismissively.
Those people might like it.
No. I think that Elements filled the same issue, you know, and I think that Elements might be a little overpriced.
Pixelmator's now in its second beta, by the way, getting better and better.
So, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yummy.
Yeah, good.
I have not seen.
Well, we can get you in on that. We have friends.
Yes.
We have friends who have friends.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you very much, Chris Breen, for joining us. I'm sorry about all the technical snafus, but you came through loud and clear once we got you on the phone, and I thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I like this phone technology.
Yeah, we just use this phone thing. It's very clever.
Here it's clever. Yeah.
You can, Mac 911, of course, is in Macworld Magazine. You can hear him on the Apple Phone Show. Anywhere else you'd like to plug? Are you performing at a Holiday Inn anywhere soon?
Not right away, but I've got an iPhone book coming out, like everybody else in the world, and I'll be updating my iPod and iTunes Pocket Guide very shortly.
Now, will you cover hacking in the iPhone book?
There is a little bit there, but because it changes so rapidly, we've actually, Ben Long and I have set up a website about hacking, so we're just going to send people there and we'll keep it updated.
And what's that site?
It's going to be geeklagoon.com.
Oh, that's great. I love Ben. So that's neat. Like, we should get Ben on the show.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, yeah. In fact, you should get him on TWIM because he really is. I mean, he's great.
We really should.
Yeah, great photographer, very talented. What is next on TWIM?
Next on TWIM, we are going to be doing that on Thursday, and we're going to be talking about, you know, a lot of things. One of the big things that's coming up right now is the writer's strike next year, and we're going to talk about how it's impacting filmmaking today.
Yeah.
So that's going to be probably one of the larger issues that we're talking about, and then just a lot of the day-to-day, what's coming up, and what's happening in the media industry.
Another great Pixel Core podcast. You can catch it at pixelcore.tv, and of course, pixelcore.com if you want to find out more about Alex's day job, the great guild of multimedia artists. Really, really neat thing. Pixelcore.com. Merlin Mann is in hiatus with the Merlin Show.
I'm basically, Leo, I'm neglecting every conceivable part of my life right now. I'm finding new things to neglect. Partly in the service of trying to relaunch 43 folders with a new look and a new CMS, which, God willing, should be happening pretty soon. But yeah, I got a lot of balls in the air. But I promise, I'm gonna get back to all of it really soon.
This is the mildly edited but still fascinating and full of bloopers version of Mac Break Weekly. We thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back next week with who knows what. But we'll see you then. Another Mac Break is broke.